It's derby time. Come on, tell your friends. We'll go to many distant lands with Dan the coach and Jackie the skater. The fun will never end. It's derby time. Welcome to the Power Through the Fourth Whistle Roller Derby Podcast. This is Jackie Bauer. Thank you for joining me today on the path to becoming better athletes, teammates, leaders, and human beings. Welcome back, listeners. Thank you so much for clicking on this podcast today. I hope wherever you are in the world that you are enjoying some beautiful weather this weekend. I am very excited about the weather where I am. I am here for it. I am all about it and can't wait to get back to it after recording this intro and outro. We've been on a journey the last few weeks. I delayed the Maureen Philippe episode a few weeks so that we could hear from Baller Shot Caller and Aaron Jackson. Then we got to talk to Maureen about COVID and about sports psychology and had this really great in-depth conversation. Last week, I did the episode on racism in roller derby. Don't pass the star. Don't juke around the issue. Let's do the work. And this week, it seems like it's a combination of all these things we've talked about in the last few weeks. It's like a really great logical progression, and I love it when a plan comes together. Because this week, the special guest is Punchio Guts, whom you might recall as someone who wrote a lot of really great information in the world for roller derby and has sold numerous books on helping rookies learn skills and intro to scrimmage type materials. And this week, we're talking about return to play training and inclusive coaching. So we're going to get our knowledge on about those in the world that are attempting to return to practice right now, what they should be looking for, what that might look like how to look at the situation as a coach before moving on to the next stage. And then we're going to dive into inclusive coaching. If you are a leader in your league, what could you be doing to make the environment a better place for learning, a better place for your skaters, your volunteers, for everyone to be together and feel like they really are a part of this magical world of roller derby? We thought that that's what we were already doing, and it's clearly not the case. We can do better. And there are a lot of great ideas shared in both of these blog posts from Punchio Guts' website, and I'm going to be linking to all of that in the show notes. And if you are on an app where the hyperlinks don't work, as I've heard that some podcast apps, the links aren't showing up, I want you to know that I have shared both of these blog posts on the Power Through the Fourth Whistle Facebook page in the last couple of weeks. You should be able to find them really easy without a lot of scrolling because I have not been posting that much. I need some me time lately, and I appreciate you understanding that. And now that you know what we're going to talk about, let's go hear from Punchio Guts. Hey, I'm Power Through the Fourth Whistle. I'm really happy to welcome Punchio Guts. Welcome, Punchy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Punchy, tell the listeners more about you. Like, how did you get into derby and all that stuff? Like, what's your origin story?
Well, I'm one of those people who joined roller derby with like no real knowledge of sports or having a sports background. And I found out about derby when I was working as a journalist, where I received a press release from Maine Roller Derby that they were starting a league. And at first I was like, oh, I'm too old. And I was 29 at the time, which is kind of ridiculous now. But then I, like a friend of mine said that she was going to the practice and wanted to go. and wanted me to go with her. So I was like, all right. So I went to one of those and I was like, yes, this is my new life. I love this. And I'd say like the only thing that maybe helped me out was that I skated, roller skated all the time when I was a kid.
You wrote a lot of books about roller derby for roller derby. How did that come about?
Well, a few things. Like my degree is in creative writing, so I'm a writer by nature. But I started in 2006 when there was like almost no resources for roller derby. And I started coaching professionally in 2012. And so it was just like learning about, and coming from a small league at the time, like I was learning about a lot of different struggles with small leagues and seeing like the same things occurring with those small leagues and like a need for resources for coaches. And so I wanted to use my skill as a writer to be able to like provide some resources for coaches who needed them.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit before I started recording. Leagues I've been a part of have absolutely used those. And it's always been kind of small to mid-sized leagues who really just needed a little help, just a little help figuring out like the order of things, a path, just something to make it a little bit more simple to be able to be better teachers.
Yeah. Most people moving into coaching on roller derby don't have a lot of background in coaching or education. And those resources are really, really, I think, necessary. Like we need something to help us. Cause like when my league started, we had nothing. We were just like, you know, there are like no YouTube videos. It was just like nothing. So we were like, I guess we're gonna try to figure this out on our own.
And now that Derby has changed so much over the years, have you had to release like updated versions at all for any of the stuff?
Yeah, I have. There's an updated version of the like new skater training manual. And it was updated in 2017, but now I like, because I'm still running the program with new skaters, I keep learning stuff all the time. So I'm like, oh, I want to revise it. I don't want to do this. And so I'll probably do it again soon.
It must be hard because it's on the one hand, you're like, yes, I did it. And then it's a job that's never done.
Yeah, that is absolutely true.
Along with writing books, you also write a really helpful blog. And that was kind of one of the big reasons why I asked you to be on the podcast this week, because you have two extremely relevant topics that have come up lately. And one is return to play training and the other is inclusive coaching. How about we start with return to play training?
Sure, absolutely. And I try to stay relevant. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, this is something that's on everyone's mind right now. I saw that WFTDA just released that map that was showing kind of where baseline conditions haven't been met yet. And yeah, it's a lot of areas where it hasn't been met yet. I like this blog post because it's kind of already giving like a little bit of a framework for when those conditions are met and we can get started again. How did you develop this post here?
So I was just like on some coaching sites and seeing that there are coaches who are wondering like how to return from quarantine, which made me think about like there's probably a lot of leagues that don't have a return to play even after like a seasonal break. And that being something really necessary and needed given that like, you know, it's a contact sport and we need to be safe. And I knew that WFTDA was coming out with the guidelines to sort of cover the COVID stuff. So I wanted to focus more on the like curriculum aspect of it and how to approach that and be as safe as possible when you have skaters coming in at different levels and different places and just making sure it's just safe for everyone, physically safe.
Okay. Where do you recommend leagues start? We have leagues of all sizes that listen to this podcast, But I think the majority of leagues that exist in the world are small to mid-size leagues. So I think they especially could use the extra help with resources, just like your books give.
So I would say a good place to start is to get a general idea of where all your skaters are at. Just thinking about where they were whenever you left training, what levels of training you have, and then kind of get an idea from your skaters, like what they've been doing, where they're at physically. And then you want to start to sort of put together a plan for not only meeting those COVID guidelines, but also how you can best train those skaters given the different levels that they're at. So you need to know where they're at first before you can really go anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. And then you developed a template for returning to play that could be adjusted for your state policy, your league policies. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so the template being, you know, each league is different and can change it as needed. But my feeling is that it's important to go into those non-contact drills for a while. And WFDA is, it's sort of, this is all like kind of baked into WFDA's COVID guidelines. But those non-contact skills is the area where you can work on your footwork and your stability and build back up to contact. I know like everybody wants to go in and be like, let's play a derby now. But you really got to make sure everyone's safe. So that non-contact to contact to scrimmage drills and then to scrimmaging.
Well, yeah, we all still need our fundamentals anyway, right? So wouldn't be bad to start there.
No, I mean, and you can always improve on those fundamentals too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have a question on each of these levels that you have in your template. You have stressed like at least four practices at each level before moving on. How did you decide to come to that number in particular?
So this is before, I don't think that these might necessarily apply under WFDA guidelines because it seems like you'll probably need a lot more. But it's hard to come up with a number. That's going to apply to all different types of leagues at different places. So I think that like four solid practices, at least those, I wouldn't even consider moving on to a higher level of training until you've spent at least that amount of practice time looking at skaters and being able to like informally assess them and where they're at.
Do you think that it kind of comes from a place where this is kind of a more evergreen idea and that we can actually use this return to skate plan for any off season going forward, like just at the beginning of your year, like this could be the standard? And because COVID's a special situation, we probably need a lot more practices.
Yeah, definitely. I think that having that return to play standard, if people are putting those together now, they can absolutely use them in the future. And that's the idea. Like, we don't want to do more work. We don't want to have to like figure this out every time we come back from a break. We can create it now in the time that we're off and then continue to revise it and use it.
Yeah, because it is like, it's developing our skills again, but also just reaction time and reflexes, these simple things along with our muscle training that can help us perform better and prevent injuries just by being more ready to actually get into these more challenging drills.
Yeah, absolutely. That reaction time, I think, is very important too. And I think like skaters at different levels of experience can, like a skater who's been playing, you know, 10 plus years can have like 2 months off and go back in, and they don't really need that much time because all that muscle memory is built in there. And it, you know, versus like a newer skater, they're going to need more time. And that's hard for a coach to figure out when you have all these people training together. But I think it's absolutely necessary that we're looking at those things too.
Do you have any suggestions for coaches that are trying to coach a wide variety of levels at the same time? Like we're all going to be gone about the same amount of time, but we'll have different amounts of experience.
Yeah. Well, I think you need to like first understand what those levels are and be able to kind of like name them and have a description for them. You know, so you might have skaters who were part of your like just learning how to skate program and what skills they were working on. And those skaters will probably need quite a bit of attention because having this long break will impact them much, much harder. But in like a league training, I guess like a league practice, you can have skaters who were maybe have only been playing around a year and then skaters for 5 years, skaters for 10 years. So being able to recognize, regardless of how long they've been playing, like what levels they're at, like here's the level of skaters who can, let's see, I guess maybe like putting them in like beginner, intermediate, advanced levels and what skills they have. And then whenever you're providing drills, kind of give a different level for each drill, so that those beginner skaters can focus on these skills within this drill and then intermediate on these skills and then advanced on a different level. So you graduate through those skills within the same drill.
Besides the number of practices suggestion, you have like this really great idea here for stability assessment before deciding to go between stages too. Can you give like a couple of examples of things maybe coaches could be looking for before moving on to another stage? Like we don't have to go through all of these, but I think these are just good things to have in mind, like a few of them.
Yeah, I think like stability kind of gives us an idea about their safety level and don't want any broken bones, you know? So
we've waited long enough, right? When we do get to come back.
yeah, really. So there's like a couple of things that you can look at specifically to see whether somebody is stable. And I think one of those is with their lateral movement. So when skaters are moving laterally, can they do that without like teetering or falling or losing their balance? Can they do that without compromising their form or like grabbing onto someone? And I think that when they can do those things, then it shows a level of stability that makes it possible for like contact and playing derby. That's like one thing you could look at.
So these are a lot of good like physical indications, like visual indications of like if skaters are ready to move from one level to the next. You don't talk about this in the blog as much, but I'm just curious. What do you think about like the mental side of moving from stage to stage? What do you think that'll be like?
I think
it's a lot harder probably.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of skaters who are like just ready to go and feel exasperated by being held back from like higher levels of training. And I think it's going to be an opportunity to practice our mental game and our mental focus and see the value in whatever training we're allowed to engage in.
So direct the super eager beavers into just throwing themselves into these like skill drills and be like, well, okay, you want to move on, prove it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's one way to do it.
Let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our wonderful sponsors. Roller Derby Athletics provides high-level coaching to derby athletes worldwide. They've been the leaders in home-based roller derby cross-training for over 7 years. They offer team training plans to support your league. RDA wants to help teams keep working together toward their goals. Membership is now open year-round, so you have access whenever you need it. You can sign up for the Essential Plan, which is great if you prefer to do workout plans on your own, at your own pace. You can choose from a huge library of derby-specific workouts. If you get stuck, there are instructional videos that can help you understand the exact moves you need to get maximum results. There's also the MVP plan, which is perfect for the derby athlete who enjoys additional coaching. This plan is personalized to your needs and can help you reach your goals a lot quicker with the help of RDA's Skater Success coaches. You can follow the workout calendar and drag and drop it to fit your schedule and get access to all the boot camps and group fitness challenges for free. My favorite group challenge is Suns Out, Funds Out, because that one helped me get to my first pull-up ever. And I love that the workouts don't take up a ton of your time. They're short and effective. Roller Derby Athletics offers a ton of derby-specific workouts that will help you to be stronger and faster on the track. And it's all provided to you in the palm of your hand in an easy-to-use app. RDA wants to keep everyone safe, strong, and unstoppable. Get started on your fitness journey today. Visit rollerderbyathletics.com/plans to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Bout Betties, the only roller derby subscription service in the world. They offer a range of levels, so you're sure to find a pack that fits in your budget. So whether you're wanting derby enamel pins, comfy athleisure clothes, or sturdy workout apparel, they have you covered. As for me, I super love the apparel. You may have noticed how often I wear it when I make videos for our Facebook page. The leggings, shorts, and sports bras are amazing. The material is ridiculously silky, smooth, and soft. The first time I pulled on my leggings, I could not stop touching my legs and asking friends to touch my legs so they could feel the magic that is this material. And it's so darn cute. There's mermaids, dinosaurs, cats, and many fun new designs coming your way. Whether you're hitting the track, skate park, gym, or grocery store, you will turn heads and bring joy to those you meet. They offer sizes small through 3X, and leggings are bout tested and derby durable. Subscribe today using our podcast promo code POWER10 for 10% off your first pack at boutbetties.com. It's like derby Christmas every single month, and yes, they do ship internationally. Now, back to our show. Well, I'm definitely going to be linking to both of the blog posts in the show notes of this episode. But I think I'd like to move on to the other topic now, because there is so much to talk about here, and that is inclusive coaching. I guess start with, why is this subject so important to you?
Well, it's so important to me because throughout my career as a coach, I have continually been learning, but I reached, you know, there was some point, I don't remember where it was, where I really started to dive into looking for ways that people felt excluded within coaching. And then in my own life, just looking at marginalized populations and how they're impacted, and how I can interrogate my own privileges so that I can be a better human and not be a harmful person. And I recognized that there were like embedded things in my own language and my behavior and that I hadn't interrogated, and that impacted how I coached people. And my privilege was that I didn't really have to look at those things. And I started realizing that, and I wanted to make those changes and make derby a safe space for everyone. And throughout years, I just started to see more of how it wasn't a safe space, and people were saying, oh, roller derby is so revolutionary and so inclusive. And I was like, actually it isn't. It isn't for a lot of people. And I have been putting together this blog post for a while to give coaches a resource for making changes to their own language and behavior so that they can create that safer space for everyone. I want derby to be actually what it claims to be.
Yeah, that it seems like such a simple ask, but there is so much to it. And it's going to take a lot of people committing to doing better for that to happen.
It really will. And I think right now, when a lot of white folks are more invested in learning about racial justice and understanding their privileges, that they are like more open to this conversation.
We hope so. That's why we're absolutely doing this episode today too, because I think people are listening more than they used to. And hopefully some of this stuff can be actionable. And that's what I really like about this blog post is there's a lot of actionable things like changing some terminology of like drills and skills and strategies and being aware of microaggressions. Do you want to talk about some of these things? I'm not even sure where to start. There's just so much, there's so much here to talk about.
Yeah. I do want to preface that, I don't ever want to like center my white voice, but I do think that as a white person, and a white ally that like we need to take on the responsibility of educating other white folks so that it's not left to black and brown people to do that education. So there's like a balance in there and figuring out how to do that. So this blog post is hopefully finding that balance. But yeah, there's a lot of information there. Hopefully it's not too overwhelming. Maybe it is. But yeah, there's just so many ways that we can start to think about our own behavior and specifically around like language and drill names or names of skills. So I was trying to find, do research to see if anybody had written about like drill names and them being like culturally appropriative. And I really couldn't find much information at all, if any, if I recall, but like, it's like, well, I've heard other coaches talk about how like using the words Mohawk or Tomahawk are offensive to Indigenous people. And but I didn't see anything really written about it. So that's like
somehow these terms got spread around and we all knew what they meant. And it's just kind of, it's almost strange that they ever came to be.
Yeah. And for the longest time, like I did not question those words and I use them. I have books that have those terms in them, which I apologize for and made those changes, but in updates, but yeah, we just don't, like we just hear the language and speak it and don't really think about it. And I think it's really important to ask ourselves like, why, what does this word mean? What does this phrase mean? And can it possibly be offensive to a group of people? And then what other language can be used so that I'm not offending a group of people?
One of them here that really spoke to me personally is I'm someone who just says, you guys, for anyone and everyone that I meet. And I never thought about it that much. And seeing that you're saying, oh, no, you skaters are everyone made me realize I didn't even think about it even being a gendered term. And so now that's something I need to do better that I realize now.
Yeah. And I think specifically you guys is very, very hard to remove from language. And it's something that I had used for the longest time because I didn't think about it. And to me, somehow it was like gender neutral. And then.
Yeah, that's where I was too.
Yeah, came to understand that. No, actually, it's not. And I still like accidentally say it sometimes. And I'm like, oh, no. How? Why is that still in there?
It's just one of those things where it's you know, instead of like just being like, don't do this, we just have to replace the habit we want to correct with the habit we do want to use, which is why you've offered a lot of helpful words here. I particularly like using helmet covers instead of panties. I never liked panties anyway. That was But yeah, there are a lot of very good ideas here that I really appreciate.
I also think that one thing that's really important is to not just learn like, oh, I shouldn't use this word. Like, don't use co-ed, use all gender. Instead of just learning that, learn like how and why it's important to use all gender and why co-ed is a problematic word. Because if you just learn like, oh, don't use this word, use this other word, then you're only learning etiquette. You're not actually understanding the problem with the language.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction. I'm really glad that you brought that up. You also brought up being aware of racial microaggressions. This is something that's been talked about on the podcast recently in the Baller Shot Collar episode. There's just a lot of things that I think people didn't think about. And I like that you brought up some of these. Would you like to pick a few that particularly speak to you to talk about?
I think that, you know, Black and brown skaters have been sharing many of these microaggressions. And, you know, it's important for us to listen to them whenever they address it and spend that emotional labor doing that. And what I've learned and also what I've seen is like people with derby names that use language that is, you know, like white people using language that is racially coded and offensive, like ghetto. I think like anybody having that name, having those jerseys can be just like for somebody to see that, hear that can be create an unsafe space for them. There's also, I mean, many skaters have talked about officials calling people by the color of their skin rather than the color of their jersey. There's also coaches, announcers, officials who will mix up the names of two people of the same race that, you know, isn't white. There's quite a few. I don't know if I should stop at some point.
No, this is all very, very valuable information that I think we do need to talk about. So there's a lot of things here with language, transphobic language, language that is insensitive toward mental illness. I'm going to let people, I kind of want people to go back and read the blog. So I'm going to encourage people to read because there's so many details here that I think are important and we just don't have the time to go into all of them today. The next thing I want to ask about is tone policing. Would you like to talk about that one a little bit? Because I think that's another important one in terms of having these conversations to be better. I didn't have an end to that sentence.
I'll infer the end of that sentence. I think that I've seen tone policing happen very, very often within derby when, I mean, it takes so much for a person who's experiencing microaggressions, experiencing an unsafe environment. It's so hard to just speak up and to gain that courage and do that is very admirable. But that is often met with like defensiveness and people also saying things like, well, you know, like you need to calm down and, you know, like will not listen to someone when they're reporting on their own experience because it makes them uncomfortable and they need to hear it like in, well, they say they need to hear it in some polite way, but basically what they're saying is, I don't want to hear this at all. Because even if you come trying to be polite, it's often not met with understanding. So I think it's really important for people to recognize how they're responding to other people when they do report on their experiences, particularly people from marginalized groups when they're reporting on their experiences. And if that makes you uncomfortable, you got to sit with that and deal with that. And instead like respond to someone, even if they're like angry, you know, respond to them compassionately, understand that they're like in distress and look for ways that you can be comforting and you can show that you hear them and show them that you're going to take action and do something about it.
Yeah, I think that if we create rules about how someone reports an incident or how someone tells their story, that we're just making the communication that much harder, creating barriers to moving forward and doing better. Like we are the problem when we do that.
Yeah. And typically that is only used on people from marginalized communities. It's not, you know, like this white person can be angry and then, you know, like other white people be like, oh, how do we fix this? You know, like typically when it's like this white person yelling the loudest, then their concern is heard. However, if it comes from somebody from a marginalized group, their concern is met with like more anger and defensiveness.
Mm-hmm. Or skepticism, mm-hmm. which is just, we need to do a better job believing people because it is, like you said, it is so hard to come to someone with something that's really important to you that you need to share and have it be discounted in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just as a non-binary person to go and try to talk to someone about like using my pronouns, it feels like I'm going to them and asking them to see me as a human being and to care about me. And that's a really hard thing to do.
You're asking for basic respect, but it's still really hard to start the conversation.
It is. Yeah.
Another thing that you talk about that I'm very interested in, I've actually been talking about this quite a bit lately with some of my league mates, is to consider implicit biases. Like there are tests online that you can take for free where you can kind of learn more about your implicit biases if you're not already aware of them. What do you think about how we can better understand our implicit biases in roller derby to communicate better with each other?
Understanding your implicit bias is so difficult because mm-hmm. it's unconscious and it's unrecognizable. And so you really have to like interrogate all your thoughts and your beliefs and your opinions and where they come from. And that's a lot of work. And it's like intentional work that you have to do all the time. So, you know, if you're making this decision, why are you making this decision? Like, let's say you're assessing skaters to join your league. Having a knowledge base that Black and brown skaters are often judged far more harshly than white skaters, having that at the forefront of your mind and thinking about that while you're assessing skaters. So let's say there's a mix of races in that group. Thinking about like, am I looking for ways to include Black and brown people, or am I looking for ways to exclude them and judging them more harshly? So I think maybe the first step is like listening to people's experiences and how they've been excluded, how like systems within derby along with individuals have made it unsafe. And then once you understand that more, then you can start to look at your behavior and see if you're replicating any of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we don't know we're doing them until someone helps us point it out, or we go take one of those helpful tests, and then we can just be a little bit more aware of, oh no, I didn't realize I have a tendency to do this. I really need to watch for that, because then if I notice it starting to come up, I can actually address it and do something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't know what you don't know. So you
exactly. But what you don't know will still absolutely have impact on other people. So that's why we got to try. We got to try to do this better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like people who have a little bit more knowledge about the impact of privilege need to share that and need to like call in folks first and talk to them about how they can make changes in their behavior and, you know, just like help one another along.
Yeah, absolutely. Another topic that goes along with language that we talked about before is cultural appropriation, which is also in your blog post here. Can you tell me some examples of what that might look like for those who just aren't really aware of what they should be looking for?
Are you asking how that like appears in Derby, how cultural appropriation?
Yeah.
Appears?
Yeah. Some like, you have some ideas of like how people are doing it, like using their, like on their jersey or whatnot.
Okay. Yeah. Something I've seen a lot can be, is like, white people using like Day of the Dead face paint. Like that's not from their culture. And using that can be offensive to Latinx people, specifically Mexican people. And there's also people who have used like indigenous face paint who are not indigenous. I think I've also seen logos that have, that are offensive to indigenous populations. And I mean, we see that in like other sports like football with the Washington Redskins.
Oh, absolutely. That one comes up all the time, right?
Yeah. People have been trying to address that forever. But like, I mean, this happens in Derby too. I've seen logos with cultural appropriation and just culturally offensive. And we definitely need to do better as a community.
Okay, let's talk about interleague gameplay. What are some things we could be doing better in terms of interleague gameplay to make sure we are being inclusive and not creating problematic situations?
It's one thing to like create a safe space in our own leagues and start to do that work. But anytime we say yes to an away game, taking our team into somebody else's space, we don't know if those other leagues are doing that work. So I think it's really important to do your research and ask some questions about those other leagues, those other teams, so that you can make sure that that's a safe space for marginalized folks on your team and your officials, anybody who's traveling there.
What would some of those questions be like?
So I would want to find out, like, do the other league, the other team, like, do they ask about pronouns? Does their announcer ask for a list of pronouns? Do their officials have any kind of history of like racial bias? Do you even have like Black and brown people on your league? What are their struggles? What are you doing to like make the league safe for them? Do you address concerns with your officials about racial microaggressions? Do you have like an all-gender bathroom? What's your community like? Are there people of color there? Is it going to be, you know, like, I guess a community that's like all white would probably say, yeah, it's safe for all these other communities of people, you know, and that's their privilege. But, you know, you really kind of have to do some of that research to figure out, is it actually going to be safe? Yeah, maybe looking at like the types of things that the league posts or people on the team post, see if anything's like problematic, if people are problematic in their regular lives.
It almost sounds like an interview process to see if the other league is ready to become like a good partner in the fight against these issues, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if I were the person scheduling this game and I found out that this is not a safe space for any one person on the team, then it's like a hard pass.
Right. And I hope that by bringing this up and by like having this clear list of questions here that, I mean, we have so much time until there's another game. We can be thinking about these things now. Like we've got nothing but time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We could be researching these other leagues just to see how safe they are and what they're doing to make their spaces safe.
Yeah, if anyone needs new jerseys, you've got so much time. Anything you gotta, you realized, oh, this is actually a problem.
Right. Yes. Now's the time.
Oh wow. You even pulled together this huge list of Derby resources here at the bottom that are all these other wonderful articles that other people have written. This is just so great. I love that you did the work to gather these together, because sometimes, like you said, like you were searching the internet for information before and couldn't find it. Sometimes these things can be hard to find. So I really appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, well, I teach a research class, so it's, I think, maybe a little bit easier for me to find it, but I also do my research before I write. I want to know like what other people are writing, if they've written about it, and I just like collect all those resources. So I will continue to research them and then update that list as I find more things.
It definitely shows in your writing and in your website. It's like what you've been doing is like this perfect partnership of your career and your sport, like getting to bring the best of both worlds together. So I really appreciate you using your knowledge like this to make Derby a better place.
Thank you. I also really appreciate you and your podcast and doing the same thing, making Derby a better place, because like everybody learns in very different ways. Like some people want to read, whereas that can be really challenging. So like being able to listen or being able to watch a video is really helpful for so many people, just to have all those different resources.
I agree. I think the more ways we can get to people with different learning styles, the better.
Yeah.
I think we're actually coming to the end here. Would you like to share where you can be found on the internet if you want to be found?
Yeah. Please find me. I love to talk to people and have discussions about these topics. I think it's so important. So I have a website, punchyoguts.com, and then I'm on all the social medias. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I think that's it. People don't really go on Tumblr much anymore, do they?
But, I don't. I never made the jump over there because I'm not sure what's going on over there.
but yeah, it's like all of those social media sites are like /punchyoga.
Awesome. And I will definitely share links in the show notes to those. And yeah, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate this. And I feel like you have so much information here. Might have to have you back for another episode sometime, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I mean, I love talking about this stuff. So thank you for giving me that opportunity and for engaging in this conversation and sharing it with your listeners.
And we're back. I really hope you can't hear the sounds of a sad kitten scratching at the door. But when I've let Lupin be in here, he knocks stuff over and messes up the recording. So no, Lupin, you're not invited to the podcast. I'm sorry. You cannot be a guest. But who was a great guest is Punchio Guts. I really enjoyed having this conversation with them. And there are so many blog posts on their website. I really encourage you to go check it out. As I said before, including the links. And if the links don't work, go to Facebook. On my Facebook page, you can find it. And of course, all of their social stuff you can find directly. I think one of the most important takeaways for me from this week's guest is that when it comes to inclusive coaching and making the environment of your league more inclusive to more people, this isn't just learning etiquette. This isn't just replacement words. We aren't learning new language or vocab. This is about a greater understanding of how and why words matter. I think the understanding will help with the new habits we want to form, because this is about informing and changing the way we think so that we can keep this knowledge in mind when choosing how to act. Once you realize how you are affecting other people, I like to think that you'll try that much harder not to cause others harm, and keep the environment of practice, where you want your skaters to feel safe and included, a place they can learn, which is already a vulnerable state of being without piling on anything else. I mean, it is hard to get skaters to trust that they're going to go out and do the skill and everything's going to be okay sometimes. let's keep it about that. Also, to talk a little bit more about the return to play mentality, I got this great comment from Suzanne in Australia this week. And Suzanne says, just a warning from people who've already returned to training, it's weird. I think a lot of us felt a lot more anxious than we expected. Everything had changed since we stopped training. Take it easy. Maybe you won't be comfortable going back on skates the first session back, but take them anyway. Maybe just going back into a venue will feel surreal. Be super patient with yourself and others. Thank you, Suzanne, for sharing that, because I think a lot of us have different opinions on what it's like or what it's going to be like. Punchy said there might be a mentality of people wanting to rush ahead and get to, you know, the quote unquote good stuff or whatever as quickly as possible, you know, and some people are going to be more anxious. Some people aren't going to feel ready for that because there has been so much kind of trauma surrounding this COVID experience. And there's other interesting things to think about, too. For example, I've been of the opinion that this extended off season might create a lot of retirements for people who were kind of near the end of their career anyway and were kind of on the fence about continuing. They might take this opportunity to be like, well, I think I just want to be done so that I have that finality, that closure, so that I can move on, because the act of waiting isn't for everybody. So I've been kind of expecting that. Whereas Coach Dan has been like, oh, are you kidding? People are going to be so eager to come back. We might get some of our old retired skaters back, our old like people who like stepped away from the sport. More people might come back. We might get more recruits. And I think there's going to be a combination of both. I actually got to chat with Suzanne a little bit to ask for permission to share the comment. And in Australia, it's been a bit of both. Some people retired, but also a surprising amount of new recruits and new enthusiasm and returns from skaters who had stopped skating. So it's going to be kind of an adventure to see what happens. But as advised, please be kind to yourself and others. Understand everyone's in their own mental place with this, and just be good to each other. Kindness is a choice. Empathy is a choice. Let's try to exercise these skills when communicating. Thank you so much for listening to the episode this week. Thank you again to Punchio Guts. I really appreciate having you on. And thank you and pew pew to a new patron on Patreon, Stephanie Musto. Thank you very much. And thank you to all of our top tier patrons, Sheila Stryker, Bye Felicia, Stevie Kicks, Rachel White, Tara Wevenson, and the training team at Charlotte Roller Derby. And thank you to all the patrons. I appreciate you so much. Thank you to Jenergy, our transcriber, who does so much work to make these episodes more accessible for more people. And thank you so much to people who shared last week's episode on social media. I thought it was a really important episode, and I really appreciate those who did take the time to share it with others, like Des Moines Roller Derby, Cindy Martin, Hulkstress, Elizabeth Clockskin, Sarah Hawkins, Wendy McLean, and Roller Die. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the support. There were actually many people who shared the episode, but because of privacy settings, as always, I can't personally thank all of you, but know that you are thanked in my heart. That takes us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you for continuing to listen and check in during this off season, this opportunity for us all to be better. Thank you. We have been talking about Derby and sharing Derby thoughts. Pew, pew! Thank you for listening to another episode of Power Through the Fourth Whistle Roller Derby Podcast. I really hope those laser beams of positivity will carry through your day. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Facebook or on Instagram or Twitter at Power. Power Fourth Whistle. That's P-O-W-E-R, the number 4, T-H-W-H-I-S-T-L-E. You can find fun videos of On and Off Skates training at our YouTube channel, Facebook page, and Instagram. You could also support the podcast on Patreon for as little as a dollar a month. The benefits of becoming a patron include fun stuff I can send you, like stickers, buttons, or shirts from our Threadless store. You can get access to our Discord server, bonus content, and free giveaways. Plus, patrons now have access to an ad-free version of the podcast that will download to your favorite podcast app each week, and everyone can access our transcribed episodes at patreon.com/powerforthwhistle. If you like the content we provide and want to support us on this journey, please consider becoming a patron. If you want to expand your derby wardrobe, of course, another way to support the podcast is visiting our store at powerforthwhistle.threadless.com, where you can get our designs on just about any type of apparel or accessory you can dream up. Please, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast anywhere you can. Leaving reviews is still the best way to help this podcast be found and spread those laser beams of positivity to more humans. Plus, it's a way you can give back that is completely free. Open up your Apple Podcast app, punch those stars, and leave me a pew pew!